Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloem. One of California's hidden jewels is Lassen Volcanic National Park, tucked away in the northeastern part of the state and home to one of the most recently active volcanoes in the United States, Lassen Peak. The park is a treasure for scientific inquiry, with its diverse volcanic landscape that features not only a recently active volcano, but also the largest geothermal area west of Yellowstone. NASA scientists from the Ames Research Center have been investigating the primitive life forms, ancient species of bacteria known as extremophiles that live in those geothermal areas, as possible analogs for extraterrestrial life that might be found on Mars or the moons of the outer planets. Lassen is also an ecologically fascinating place, since it lies at the intersection between three distinct provinces, the Sierra Nevada to the south, the Cascade Range to the north, and the Basin and Range Province to the east. The park's rich scientific heritage, with visitors from William Brewer and John Muir in the 19th century, to contemporary scientists from NASA and the United States Geological Survey, make it the perfect place as the latest addition to the University of California's Natural Reserve System. In this program, we'll examine just why this place is not just a fun spot to go for camping and hiking, which it most certainly is, but also a fertile ground for scientific investigation. Later on in the program, we'll talk to the person I consider to be the world's foremost expert on the park's geology, Michael Klinn from the USGS, about a new book he co-authored, Geology of the Lassen Country. But first, let's investigate how and why Lassen Volcanic National Park has become the latest addition to the ecosystem library known as the University of California Natural Reserves. By the numbers, you get a sense of just how important this system is. There's 41 natural reserves in the UC program that represent virtually all of the state's diverse ecosystems. At 756,000 acres, it's the world's largest university reserve system, protecting 50 miles of coastline, plus the tracts of inland areas. 147,000 students and researchers utilize the natural areas every year. Those researchers have published hundreds of papers in the past few years alone. So to be named a new unit for the system is a big deal, and joining us to talk about it is Jeffrey Clary from UC Davis, who will oversee the administration of the Lassen Field Station and the park superintendent, Jim Richardson. Jeff Clary and Jim Richardson, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Jeffrey, I'd like to start with you because a lot of us are unfamiliar with the University of California's natural reserve system. And I was looking at it today online. It's extensive. Could you just give us a little bit of history and an overview about it? I know I saw one of the early versions when I was in the Owens Valley up in the White Mountains as a kid. Tell us about the natural reserve system that UC operates.
The natural reserve system is really an amazing resource for Californians and really in the end the world. As you said, it's something that's been around for a long time. It dates back to the mid-60s, which was a time of, you know, really fast demographic growth in California. And it's the whole thing started in Southern California. What was happening was that professors from UCLA and UC Riverside had kind of gotten in the habit of being able to essentially walk out their classroom doors and head off into the hills right next to campus to use those sites as teaching places for their classes, and also to do some of their own research on plants and animals of California. But what was happening during that period is suburbanization and growth was happening so quickly that from year to year, places they had always been able to kind of count on were no longer there. And so a number of visionary faculty members got together and came up with this kind of harebrained scheme to start integrating these field stations into the UC system. And that idea really took off. They managed to convince the administrations of their campuses, as well as the Office of the President of the University of California, to really buy into this idea.
And how many of them are there?
So right now, thanks to the addition of the Lassen Field Station and another recent partnership with Point Reyes, we're up to 41. And if you kind of look at a map of these places, we're doing a pretty good job of spanning California. One of our explicit goals in the natural reserve system is to really find a way to represent each special habitat type in California in the network so that those one of those places of each kind of ecosystem that we have in the state is available for teaching and for research that is really going to inform how we manage it, those and these types of places into the future. So the, you know, with that in mind, we really have through the years expanded the system, and we're looking at a California that is largely, you know, represented within our network.
Well, and tell us a little bit about the UC Davis components of this. Tell us about the ones that you oversee.
So UC Davis has a network that's mostly places within about 2.5 hours here of campus. And all the UC campuses actually manage a handful of these natural reserves. Ours start over at the coast, the north coast of Sonoma County, with the Bodega Marine Reserve. And this is a few hundred acres of beautiful coastal prairie, which is a really threatened habitat type here in California. But it also goes down to the actual waterline and the intertidal zone, where you have all these fascinating things happening with the interface of the land and the ocean. So it's a hugely productive place where research happens. Something on the order of 70 to 75 publications, scientific publications, are coming out of that site every year. It's really helping inform the world of oceanography, what's going on, especially in these times of climate change. And then kind of moving inland, we have three field sites that are at different places within the coast range. One of those is the McLaughlin Reserve, which is up near Clear Lake. That site is really fascinating because it's the site of an old, at this point, a decommissioned gold mine. And those same geologic processes that allowed gold to concentrate up at that site and make it a productive mine also meant that a lot of other kind of strange stuff was happening in geologically. And so up at McLaughlin, you get these really strange soil types interspersed with kind of normal California soils. So serpentine soils, as these are called, have really strange mineral ratios and make it really hard for plants to live in them. But what that means is that's a new niche where kind of unusual species can evolve and live without the competition of all that other background stuff going on. So McLaughlin has an amazing diversity of plants especially, and then insects associated with those plants because of those really weird soils. Then we have the Quail Ridge Reserve and Stebbins Cold Canyon, which are pretty near one another, like down around Lake Berryessa. Both of those are kind of what I would consider typical California coast range habitat. So that's to say those beautiful golden hills with those blue oaks kind of studded all over them. Quail Ridge Reserve is special because it's very well protected. It's actually surrounded on three sides by Lake Berryessa. So it definitely is a place where we can put out long-term field experiments and not worry about them getting, you know, vandalized or otherwise hurt. It also has a really beautiful hilltop field station, which was paid for recently by the National Science Foundation, that is just an amazing place to work. And it's a place that really kind of inspires that kind of wonder and questioning that I think leads to good science. And then right down the road, there's Stebbins Cold Canyon, which is probably our most well-known reserve, at least before the Lassen Field Station, because it's open to the public. There's a 5-mile hiking loop through it that really is, I think, not that I'm unbiased here, probably the best hike in the region. Within that 5 miles, you get shaded canyon lands along a stream with lots of wildflowers. And you also have this 1,400-foot climb to these views out over the Lake Berryessa and its watershed, up to Mount Conocti and Snow Mountain to the north. I mean, it's everything you want in a short hike. And then we also have Jepson Prairie, which is one of the last unplowed remnants of the Western Central Valley. And that's another one that's really special from that rare habitat standpoint for us.
Okay, so it sounds like you have a really great representation of natural ecosystems on the coast and then the Coast Range and then the Sacramento Valley. Let's talk about this latest addition because it's in a very different place. So, Jim, my question for you as the superintendent there at Lassen Volcanic National Park, who was it that reached out to who? How did this come about? Could you tell us about that from your perspective?
This has been explored for about 4 years, And so we've been talking about that, talking about opportunities, talking about our individual programs and roles. And we've found that we marry up very well. We fit into the niche of the one of the missing pieces of the field station. So we are volcanic in origin. Basically all the geology at Lassen is volcanic, but we also have a very rich biological area. As we are the junction of the Sierra and the Cascades. So that's very unique as well.
And the Great Basin as well. It's three different areas that meet right there in the park.
Yes, in fact, the Great Basin as well. That's correct.
Which makes Lassen just an incredible place for biodiversity. And so I'm wondering, Jeffrey, from your perspective, tell us about what makes Lassen Volcanic National Park attracted to the UC Natural Reserve System.
Well, just adding on what you've said, I mean, the natural resource that's in place up there is unique and it's incredible. So, you know, that kind of speaks for itself. But just more globally, if we're looking at, it's hard to show you a map of California over the radio, but that entire northern, especially northeastern section of California doesn't really have any outposts of, you know, the University of California system. And it's just not a place that's easily on the radar of our teachers and our researchers. So just having this partnership in place and the publicity that's kind of gotten going about this new partnership has drawn researchers out of the woodwork who have always kind of known about that spectacular natural resource up there, but didn't really put it together with the idea that that's a place I can go and do my work. So, you know, we're talking about actual humans here. Scientists are people. And one of the things that's really attractive about Lassen as well is that it's a nice place to work in the summer. If you go back through that list I kind of made for you earlier, you're looking at a lot of Coast Range sites, which in the middle of summer, which is when a lot of researchers actually have time to do their work, you're somewhere in between, you know, hot oven and blazing furnace. So having a place that's just a pleasant place to work and such a beautiful setting as well is actually really appealing to, you know, teachers, researchers, and the students that are part of those classes.
Jim, I remember a conversation I had in your office with your predecessor, Stephen Gibbons, who was the superintendent before you. And he talked to me about having a vision of turning the park into one of the premier science centers in the entire national park system, because it has all these incredible components. And even though UC is now, you know, interested in this, it's been a place that's been of interest to geologists from around the world for over 100 years, with the eruption and even going back before that to the William Brewer original Whitney expedition that did the exploration of California. So it's got this rich scientific history. And then layered on top of that, you have NASA that's very interested up there. Could you tell us a bit about, you know, why it's so appealing to them?
Yes, of course, Lassen, up until Mount St. Helens eruption, Lassen was the most recent eruption in the lower 48. And so had very much contemporary interest of especially geologists, but other scientists as well. And it was important enough that in 1916, Congress passed the legislation that made it into a national park. And in that legislation, they specifically noted that research and education were an important part and to be part of our mission. So we have done that through the ages and through the various staffs that have been there and the cooperating scientists that have come to visit this very new geologically, very new place on the landscape. It's also old on the landscape. So to see that diversity is very special. We have for many years now, we've had about an average of 35 research permits, research scientific permits that we have issued to university level or even private researchers. So we have a long history of research of all sorts of science at Lassen. And so when new researchers come with ideas on what they would like to do, we have a great background from which to draw.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, NASA's very interested in the park because you have the extremophiles, the archaeobacteria, the ancient life forms that may be the kinds of things, you know, we may find on places like Mars. You know, so I know that it's of interest to astrobiologists and geologists. It's just, as I said, it's the science park. As far as I'm concerned, it's kind of got everything.
In particular, the NASA program is very interested in the park, and we believe that could be like the origins of basic life, and it may be happening that way on other planets. So that study is extremely interesting, and we have a group from NASA that comes up to one of our gateway communities in Red Bluff, and we have essentially an honor science class for high school students at Red Bluff High School, and they come up and study the very early life in those hot environments, the hot pools, the bubbling mud pots, and life as it grows at Lassen and could be applied to other planets as well.
We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll continue our look at the University of California's Natural Reserve System and its latest addition, the Lassen Field Station at Lassen Volcanic National Park. I'm Dave Schloem, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back. Let's return now to our conversation with Jeff Clary from UC Davis and Jim Richardson, superintendent of Lassen Volcanic National Park, as we talk about the newly designated part of the UC Davis Natural Reserve System, Lassen Field Station.
Lassen, for many years, has been a leader in education from really the high school level down, but we have not really cracked the university level students and professors, other than by research. So one of the big benefits to Lassen is the education value that the Davis relationship brings to us. In addition to bringing what we expect will be university level field classes, We expect that Davis will serve a similar role as a portal for other higher education institutions to come in and do, in particular, research, high-level research at Lassen.
And I absolutely agree with that, Jim. And I would just add, in a general sense, this partnership is really taking the strengths of both of these very kind of large and important institutions, but that have very different missions and kind of different staffing and different ways of going about things, and bringing those together in a way that, in that overlap through the Lassen Field Station, I really think, I expect, a lot of new synergies that wouldn't happen in the absence of this partnership. You know, our bread and butter here at the Natural Reserve System is just finding ways to help research and teaching happen. You know, whether or not it happens on one of our existing sites, we're always out there looking for places that people can do their work. And when you look at Lassen, where there's just this background level of interest, because it's such an amazing place, it's iconic. So the idea of both having an iconic partner, and down here in Sacramento and Davis, on a clear morning, we see, you know, Lassen Peak looming on the horizon. So it's always kind of there. It's part of our existence anyway. That iconic landscape is then suddenly propelled into this world. As Jim was saying, I think that educational component really comes in because we have, you know, grad students who are out doing their field work, maybe two or three field seasons. Lots of times grad students don't really have great opportunities to be sharing their work, certainly not with a more general public and not with resource managers like those you'd find on staff at the park. So really, I think one of our visions, and I think it's a shared one, is that our people, our researchers who are up there doing their work, are not just doing their work, but they're sharing their work, sitting down at brown bag lunches with the park staff, or actually finding ways to incorporate what they're learning about in, you know, campfire sessions at night. I just think there's so many opportunities that we don't have at any other places that we serve that are represented with this partnership.
Jim, anything you want to add to that?
We're just very excited to be in this partnership finally officially. We've been talking about it for several years since the previous superintendent, you're correct. And it's finally a reality. We look forward to this a relationship gelling and becoming very comfortable together. And I really foresee this being a very comfortable partnership.
And I would say, I mean, working, one of the most exciting parts of our job here at the reserve system recently has been getting to know the resource staff there at the park. I mean, they have an incredibly dedicated and incredibly knowledgeable set of people that, you know, really, you know, have a vision to go beyond what they're doing currently, but doing it in a smart way that's not really layering new sets of responsibilities and liabilities on everyone. I think that's the beauty of the partnership, is finding ways to not overwork ourselves, just do what we each do best in a way that then brings synergies.
Could you give us an example or like a kind of a picture as we go into the future of what this may look like, you know, for a researcher from UC Davis and perhaps students? You know, give us an example of how these reserves are actually used.
So we are open to all kinds of academic use, and it's actually not just for UC Davis. Honestly, our model is to welcome all academic endeavors to our sites. So we are very broad, and you know, I speak UC Davis language because that's where I'm based. But really, I would say one of our most important roles is helping graduate students. You know, those who are actually out in the field doing the work that then feeds into that basic science that then we are translating into best management practices for our California landscapes. Those grad students are what really who we serve best, I think. You know, for example, we've had grad students coming to us already this spring, like wanting to look at the effects of river otters on other plants and animals in subalpine systems, and having Lassen suddenly on the map as a place to be thinking about working and having an easy way to figure out how we're gonna deal with accommodations and people to talk through the permitting process. It really just opens up new avenues for research.
And Jim, going forward, are there any plans to do more as far as providing classroom facilities or labs or anything like that in the future for these researchers and their students to use?
Part of this this vision of the partnership was that we already have some of these facilities in place and some of these opportunities. So we have a rich history of research. We have building space for meetings and for office space. We've provided mostly camping for overnight facilities for many years, and we're looking at converting some of our old buildings to overnight lodging. So for those of us who are up there in age, may no longer be as happy sleeping on the ground. That'll be a comfort and a draw to bring people back.
And you mentioned that this is bringing these university-level students in, but you've also talked about the rich history of the K through 12 education system. And I'm wondering, is there a component to that, Jeffrey, throughout the state where, you know, the UC system also benefits these, you know, younger people?
Absolutely. You'll find K through 12 programs at reserves across the state. Usually they are kind of based reserve by reserve, and typically it's with those communities that are closest to them in geographical space. And really, a lot of times, because a lot of our reserves are, you know, out in the backcountry, not in right next to the big urban areas, they really are serving communities that aren't necessarily having other strong ties to high-level science. So they're a really great opportunity. For example, up at the McLaughlin Reserve, which is a UC Davis reserve near Clear Lake, they have a program called the Kids Program, where science lessons are integrated into weekly lessons in the classroom. But then there's kind of a capstone part of that where they go out in the field to the reserve and then experience all those things they've been conceptualizing up to that point. And you go out there, you see those kids, and you realize you're both making a difference and you're making an impression that they're not going to forget anytime soon.
Jim, anything you want to add to that from your perspective as far as K through 12 education and how this new partnership might benefit the park and the people that live around it?
As Jeffrey mentioned, one of the big things will be for the university level folks to have an audience and also youth that they can pass this information on. And we are actually hoping to generate the next set of scientists from field work in the park and with other university level people that they can grow to admire. And you never know how that spark may send a student off to school and with a certain interest and that started at Lassen. And we would be very proud to be part of that maybe over and over.
Dave, I would even add that you start seeing these kind of layered levels of learning. So, for example, there's been a number of active citizen science projects going on up in the national park. And one of the things that then teaming up with a research university that can happen is that then you have researchers actually studying the process of citizen science to find out what those impacts are on the people participating, and then figuring out how to optimize that and to reach the most people possible. So you're not just doing the science, but you're doing the science about the science, and in particular, how it reaches people.
Well, finally, I'd like kind of a big picture here for folks living anywhere in the United States, the national park system, and in the world. The United States national park system, they really are the crown jewels of nature for this country. And in California, the UC is our crown jewel of education, and all of these reserves represent the best natural places in California. Tell us what you think the value, the big picture value is for this type of partnership for people everywhere.
That is a good big picture explanation, and we, of course, most people who think of the parks, they think of beautiful scenery and wildlife and plants, but they don't always think about the people involved. And so this is a chance to bring this to the people through education and through research. And this is going on at many other parks as well in our system that we call research and learning centers. That's kind of the generic term. We have yet to actually name this partnership, so we'll see how that goes. That may be an interesting process as well.
And I would say that for me, what this represents, both the National Park Service and the University of California Natural Reserves, are really representing long-term protection of resources. And you know, at a time when you know, I think sometimes it feels like everything's in turmoil, but both of these institutions are really dedicated to the long-term both preservation of things and places that are special but also using those that preservation as a learning tool and as a dissemination tool to get that knowledge out. I mean, as I see it, both the National Park Service and the UC Natural Reserve System are growing in value over time because you're building up that data that started being collected 50, 100 years ago. And, you know, now scientists can go in the field today and do just a few months of study, but they have 50 years or 100 years of back data to compare it to. So right now, when things seem to be changing so quickly on so many fronts, that power that comes from these institutions that are doing their long-term job of protecting something so special is really shining through.
Well, what I would add to that is I wish that this nation would invest in the national park system at the level that it used to. Because I know it's probably difficult for Jim to comment on this, but in my lifetime, you know, I've seen diminishing budgets for the national park system for, you know, just keeping up with basic infrastructure repair and staffing. And Lassen does, man, you talk about that place gets the biggest bang at every buck they get. And I really, you know, I wish that our country would value the parks as much as they should, because they are incredible places. They are some of the most unique places on Earth.
Well, thanks for noticing, Dave. We do try to do a good bang for the buck. And we also have systems where we can identify shortcomings in our facilities, in our staffing and programming. And we take those on up through our channels up to Washington, and Congress considers those, and they are continuing to work on that funding to help us to continue doing good things.
And I would think partnering with the University of California can only also enhance that.
It does. It very much takes what we have and gives us an opportunity to have leverage with different missions, but very much similar missions. And so it's a wonderful opportunity to grow what we do.
And here at the Natural Reserve System, I mean, we're all about bang for your buck. I mean, we consider ourselves kind of one of the little scrappy units of the University of California. Like, we're really trying to make as big a difference as possible while keeping the inputs modest, because we realize that if we were to outgrow that system, you know, we'd be putting our own model in jeopardy. So we're really about, at this point, as we're moving forward, looking at new sites, it really is this kind of partnership model we're doing with the park, because really that's where we're getting this amazing new power with resources that are basically what we've had up to this point.
Well, I hope that in the near future, once some of this wonderful research and education starts going on, we'll see some interesting stories being generated out of Lassen Volcanic National Park, and those will just organically become topics for us to discuss.
We'll look forward to that in the future.
I'm just curious, Matthew, do you have anything, Matt Fidler, our producer, who's also very interested in these issues, anything you'd like to ask Matt?
Yeah, you know, I'm working on a project about the wildfire issue in the state, and what I've been learning about that our state was very, very much the flora and fauna were very much encouraged in the ecosystems by the native populations for, you know, 10,000 years or so. And I'm wondering if any of the research has to do with not just negative human impacts, but the positive impacts that humans can have on the land. If there's any research around that, I'm just really curious.
There is lots of historical data around the fire histories, both before European man arrived here and since. And the local Native Americans in the Lassen area, multiple tribes that just ring around the Lassen area, have their own fire histories and fire traditions. But in particular, a very repeating one is fires that were set by them mostly in the fall when they would leave the high country and go back down to their winter areas that were warmer. And so this was a long-term pattern that was set, and we can see that in the way that the flora and the fauna continued to grow and emerge through time. We want to honor that and look at opportunities where using that those same traditional uses of fire can help us both stay safer, and continue to reimagine and regrow the fire landscape.
Is there any research on how that can kind of in maybe not even exactly fire, but just other man-made inputs that can help increase the biodiversity and resiliency of the forests?
A fire really was the biggest impact that we saw over time, studying this so far over time. And we have learned that since Smokey Bear has been so successful at preventing forest fires, that in many areas fire almost disappeared from the landscape. And so we are looking at from an ecological view of trying to repair that balance. And so we will do that with prescribed fire. You can't just light a fire because it's a good thing. You have to compartmentalize it and pick the weather that's the best time to do that, and go forward in trying to create a more natural mosaic of the balance of nature through fire.
Well, that sounds like a really good, interesting research project for somebody from the University of California to look at the impacts of humans on that landscape over the millennia.
We do have a number of researchers, both from UC Davis and UC Berkeley especially, that are looking at all kinds of these forest and fire management issues up there, including that one. And, you know, they're not all, most of them aren't working within the borders of the national park itself, but they are working in those other federal lands that surround it, including Lassen National Forest. And that crowd is also really excited about this new partnership because it means that in the future, they're going to have kind of a base they can work from, even if they're not working in the park. It's really kind of opening up this landscape in a way that it hasn't been before to these kinds of research. And given the importance of fire and fire management, I think that's going to be one of the primary kind of uses of this field station in the future.
Okay. I just want to thank you, Jeffrey Clary from UC Davis, the Natural Reserves Associate Director, and Superintendent Jim Richardson from Lassen Volcanic National Park. Thanks for sharing this new vision of this partnership, and we'll be very interested in seeing how it goes forward in years to come.
Thanks for having us, Dave. I appreciate it.
And thank you, Dave.
Thanks to our guests, Jeff Clary, Associate Director for the UC Natural Reserve System, and Lassen Volcanic National Park Superintendent Jim Richardson. I'm Dave Shlom, and you are listening to Blue Dot as we talk about the Lassen Field Station, the latest addition to the University of California's 41-unit Natural Reserve System. We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. Our next guest is a scientist who has made Lassen Volcanic National Park a major focus of his career as a volcanologist with the United States Geological Survey. Michael Klin was one of the principal creators of the USGS Lassen Volcanic National Park and Vicinity Geologic Map, which was, I was delighted to discover, published on my birthday in 2010. And Mike even gifted me a beautiful copy of the map in 2015 when we were working together to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the great eruption of Lassen Peak in May of 2015. Mike's latest project is a book that he co-authored with USGS colleague Forrest Hobson, and it makes the geology of not only Lassen Park, but also the surrounding area accessible to a general audience with descriptions of road trips and hikes that make the volcanic landscape come to life. It's called Geology of the Lassen Country, and it was published earlier this year by Backcountry Press in California. Mike joined me to talk about it from his office at the USGS headquarters in Menlo Park. Mike Klin, welcome again to Blue Dot.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
When did you first come to Lassen? When did it first start to get to be of an interest to you? And tell us about like when you kind of fell in love with the geology there, because you really are considered, you know, one of the foremost experts in the world about the Lassen country.
Well, my first introduction to Lassen was in 1975 when I was a field assistant for a PhD student who was working there. And I spent 1975 and 76 summers. I didn't really fall in love with the place until 1979 when Patrick Muffler of the U.S. Geological Survey asked me to take over that PhD student's work. And so I started in 1980 doing a master's thesis, geologic mapping, and it's just gone from there.
So you refer to it as Lassen Country, which I find interesting. I like that because, you know, that's kind of how I think of that. It's an area. So it's not just Lassen Volcanic National Park, is it?
That's correct. Although my work originally started to make a geologic map of Lassen Volcanic National Park, and we did that, but we realized pretty quickly that the geology doesn't stop at the park boundary. And so we expanded in order to understand the bigger picture of Lassen volcanism. So we expanded outside the park. And that's really why Forrest decided that he wanted to call it Lassen Country rather than geology of the park. He wanted to include that other work.
Yeah, because there's some amazing places like the Hat Creek Valley, and there's the big fault up there too, isn't there? The Hat Creek Fault.
That's correct. That's a big fault.
And what kind of earthquake is that capable of producing?
I think the California Geological Survey has that at about 6.8 or 6.9, something like that, which would be about the size of Loma Prieta.
Wow.
We do know that there have been large earthquakes there. Since the Hat Creek basalt was erupted 24,000 years ago, there's more than 30 meters of offset on that fault. If you calculate that back at movements of 5 meters or so, which is a big earthquake, something like a magnitude 6 plus, that would be 5 or 6 of them in the last 24,000 years.
Wow. Well, give us the big picture for people who are listening to this from that have never been in this area. Why is this region, Lassen Volcanic National Park being the focus of it, why is it so interesting geologically?
Well, there's a number of reasons. I'll just give you a couple. The first is that it's subduction zone volcanism, and it has a very wide variety of rocks that are related to melting in the mantle and eruption at the surface. The compositions of these rocks tell us a lot about the processes that are going on in the mantle as a result of subduction. And there are some very primitive, what we call primitive rocks, which are ones that have result from magma that has passed through the crust without much interaction with the crust. And so we can use those compositions to look back at the processes that are going on in the mantle.
Well,
another reason
big.
Is that it's a big, the Lassen Volcanic Center is a big, long-lived, almost a million-year result of volcanism. We can look at the compositions that have erupted over that million years and say a lot about what's going on with these mantle magmas once they get into the crust and are evolved through processes that produce what comes out at the surface. So it's just a very interesting place.
And, of course, what people always want to know is it possible for there to be eruptive activity in that area in the future?
Well, it's clearly active. It is going to erupt again in the future. We can't really say when, and it's not showing any signs of activity in the near future. What we can do is go back and look at the number of eruptions that have happened over the last, let's say, 100,000 years. There have been enough of them that the average eruption outside the park is about once every 1,500 years. And the average eruption in the park occurs about once every 13,000 years. Now, we can say that, but these things don't occur evenly spaced. They tend to occur in clusters. And that's probably a result of tectonic activity. So periods of extension in the Earth's crust allow magma to leak out. And that's what causes it to happen in little clusters rather than long-term random activity. So your chances of seeing an eruption in your lifetime are rather small. But it could happen.
And could you talk a little bit about the variety of volcanic landforms in the area? Because as I understand it, every type of volcanic landform can be found in the Lassen country, as well as some of the, you know, the best geothermal areas you can see, you know, outside of Yellowstone.
Yes. There is a wide variety of volcanoes. The statement that you can see all the kinds that are present in the world is a little bit of an overstatement. For example, there's nothing like Hawaiian volcanism. But we have big stratovolcanoes like Mount Shasta. We have fissure eruptions that produce something like the Hat Creek Flow. We have lava domes. We have shield volcanoes, relatively small shield volcanoes, lava cones. If you go and look at a Earth Science 1 book and look at the chapter on volcanism, virtually everything that you see in that chapter can be found at Lassen. Lassen also has the most vigorous geothermal system in the Cascade Range. Of course, it's nothing like Yellowstone, but it is the biggest one in the Cascades.
When I was thinking about this and looking at your book, one of the things that fascinates me is where Lassen is, because it's kind of in this interesting geologic crossroads. To the east is the what's called the Walker Lane, which is an interesting area, and you mention it in your book, and the Basin and Range geologic province and the geomorphic province to the east, Nevada and Salt Lake City and the, you know, New Utah and all that. And as you go north, that's, you know, Lassen's the beginning of the Cascades. And to the south is the Sierra Nevada. It's just at this really interesting crossroads geologically and as far as just a province. That I find that fascinating about this region.
Well, Lassen is a crossroads. It's at the center of all of those things that you mentioned. It's also dynamic. The arc of the Cascades has been migrating to the west. At about 12 million years ago, it was at the California-Nevada border. And so it's the expansion of the Basin and Range province is pushing the arc to the west. It's also contracting from the south. 10 or 12 million years ago, there was volcanism as far south as Tahoe. And now it's at Lassen. 3 million years ago, it was at about where the southern end of Lake Almanor is. Today, the southern end of Cascades Arc is about coincident with the south boundary, the southern boundary of the park. And so it's migrating north at about 1 centimeter per year. That doesn't sound like much, but a centimeter per year is 10 kilometers in a million years.
Wow. When you set out to write this book, what was the purpose? What was your target audience for this book when you decided you wanted to do this?
This is something I've been thinking about for a long time. And the idea was to write something that would bring the state of knowledge of the park, its geology, to the public. All of this stuff has already been published in the scientific literature, which is not very accessible to the public. But the current or the older books that talk about the geology of the park are mostly out of date. We've learned so much in the last 40 years that it was time to redo this. I don't personally have the time to do much of the writing. Forrest did most of it. I just kept him on track and made sure that what he was saying was correct.
Well, I always like to tell people that I know more about the geology of Lassen Volcanic National Park than most everybody I know, and that I learned about 98% of that from Michael Klinn, and what you know is just vastly more than I do. So you're just a great teacher when it comes to learning about the geology of this region. So I can't think of a better person to write a book for a popular audience. So thanks for doing this. It's a really neat book and kind of thing that you can read and take with you up there and spend a lifetime learning about this fascinating area.
Well, thank you for that. I'm very pleased, actually, that a lot of people have said good things about the book.
All right. Well, Michael, thank you. I appreciate you spending the time with us, and I really appreciate you writing this book because it's a lot of fun for me to read. I just kind of like randomly opening to a page and reading something. I always stumble across something new. Like the information about the Walker Lane really struck me as fascinating because we were just talking to a seismologist about the earthquakes in Ridgecrest and the idea that this may be over a long period of time, there's this hypothesis that the transformed boundary that is at the San Andreas Fault may be rerouting itself to the east.
Yes, that is current wisdom on the Walker Lane.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks again to our guests, UC Davis's Jeffrey Clary, Associate Director for the University of California Natural Reserve System, and Lassen Volcanic National Park Superintendent Jim Richardson, and my good friend Michael Klint from the United States Geological Survey. You can find the book he co-authored with R. Forrest Hobson, Geology of the Lassen Country, at most major booksellers. Or, if you happen to be in the Lassen Country, stop by at the Mill Creek Resort, because I left two copies there for you. Tell the owners, Joe and Jillian, that Dave sent you. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio in beautiful and talented Northern California. You can revisit this or past episodes you missed at mynspr.org, or better yet, subscribe to our podcast on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcast groove on. We're distributed by the Public Radio Exchange, better known as PRX. Our theme music is by Matt Schultz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Mr. Matt Fidler. Our associate producer and owner of a dog named Rocket is Ellie Johnson. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.